Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of this episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
That sounded like a robot, actually.
That was because I was practicing being a robot. Because it's going to be very popular. I just read a very good analytical article that said by 2040, there's a very high probability that most of the jobs that exist today in the United States will not exist because computers and or robots will be doing them, because the tremendous advances that are going on in talking about a major shift in the economy.
3D printing is it is pretty massive, the capabilities that will be there as the price point comes down on the 3D printing.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you need a person to put together a complex series of things if you can print it out, movable parts all printed, already attached together?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're, I mean, talking about a laser beam shooting into a pile of different forms of powdered metal, creating a fully functional engine that can be taken completely apart, but it's all put together already in the printer.
And probably will be a throwaway engine
That
you don't take apart and fix.
Yeah, you just recycle it and make it turn it back into powdered metal again.
The article basically went down a list of all the many, many, many things that people do today, where the majority of work is. And I realize that that seems like sort of a pipe dream sort of thing, but obviously there are little vacuum cleaners, which apparently cats think the world of, that can run around your room.
Yeah, Roombas.
And vacuum the room.
And that technology's been there for about 15 years.
Apparently there are people working very, very hard on robots that will come into, for example, a hotel room.
Yeah, clean it up.
And clean up the entire hotel room, make the bed, do everything that a maid does in a hotel room. Bingo, one entire class of occupation gone.
Yeah, so this will take care of illegal immigrant problems. There won't be a demand for them if a robot can do it cheaper.
But the point in this is that it suggested that an absolute majority of the jobs that exist today, the particularly at the manual labor level,
well, even
or factory
of that,
level, are going to be replaced by computers and robots by 2040.
Yeah, if our clientele hadn't expanded, the tools that we have today versus what we had, say, in 1980, computer tools. We're able to do much more with computers.
And that it used to take a mainframe to do what we do routinely multiple times a day. And a mainframe takes a lot of people to operate.
And here's an even bigger statement. This means that in the future, the government will be able to have an even more complex tax code, because no human will need to understand it. Not that one does now, but as the computing power gets better, the government can just keep adding more really, really dumb things to the tax code.
Yeah.
And
well, the Congress, actually.
Yeah.
But, and as a matter of fact, our CPA, who is exceptionally good and has done a wonderful job of finding ways that we can legally not pay taxes, does it via a very expensive computer program. That's the only, I was looking at the CPA we used to use locally, who, was a computer program and a stubby pencil, but a relatively inexpensive computer program and a stubby pencil. The one we're using now up in Connecticut has a very, very sophisticated program that charges per return. And but even there, their hold on that particular sector of the market is shrinking. We think, well, that's the one thing that's completely secure.
Taxes?
Tax preparation.
No.
It's becoming more and more automated every year. More and more people are using...
The one thing that's completely secured is computer programming.
Robotax or whatever it's called.
Yeah, if you can program a piece of software and you stay on the cutting edge so that you're continuing to write programs that allow programs to write more programs...
Even that, there's a big push to have computer programs written by computers.
Yeah.
And eventually, I think we'll be there.
We'll all just sit around in our easy chairs.
You know, if you're not doing something that's creative and different, if you're not out on the edge, and above all, and this is the key, I've read some very good articles on education. And if you are getting, if this is the issue with student loans right now, many people have college degrees for which they owe a lot of money, but can't find a job because they got a degree based on what they wanted to do, rather than getting a degree based on where they could get a job.
Right.
And if any of you are listening, and I think we have probably more grandparents listening than we do parents or children, it is an important factor not to simply say we're going to fund a college education, we're going to pay for a college education, or we're going to partially fund a college education.
Choose the degree with your child.
It's important to take a look down the road and say what areas are not going to be handled by robots. For instance, right now there's a pretty significant demand for nurses that nobody anticipated.
Yeah.
And why? Because we're getting older. One of the reasons we get older, by the way, is advances in technology. We're able to keep people alive longer. But the whole issue of physically taking care of a person in a hospital bed at the moment is probably well beyond anything we're going to see a computer able to do in the near future.
In the near future.
Because there's just too many variables. People are different sizes and shapes, and when you can't, the computers monitor them and can dispense a lot of the medications to them, but they still need human contact.
Yeah.
And we're entering into a brave new world. In a sense, that's the bad news. A lot of the manual labor jobs are going to go away. Just like shoe manufacturing, which was originally done in New England, big for the United States, big shoe manufacturing plants in New England because they had waterfalls. And then once the steam engine came online,
they didn't need waterfalls anymore. You can make waterfall upward.
Berkshire Hathaway used to be a clothing manufacturing firm that went bankrupt, and Warren Buffett bought it for next to nothing.
And used it as an
investment vehicle.
Right.
But that moved to the south with the steam engine, then it moved to Asia. And even in Asia, it's being replaced now. And
by
it's
machines.
Being replaced in the United States because machines can make clothing. We already are able to design a piece of clothing and make it from a computer can make the piece of clothing.
All it was waiting
soon.
For is the technology to be there cheaply enough to replace low-cost labor and shipping costs.
That's starting to happen.
It's already getting there, yeah. And one of the things that there are some negative consequences, not that there are.
There's some big negative consequences.
This is true based on what we were talking about at the end of last hour, too. Energy prices and us as the United States becoming a powerhouse for energy, literally a powerhouse, that is going to cause unrest in large portions of unrestful areas of the world anyway.
Well, we should be exporting more beds.
More beds?
So they can rest better
instead of having unrest? Yeah, that's possible.
I just saw a big advertisement that, Delta Airlines, you can sleep well knowing that you can sleep well on Delta.
Well, see, well, you should just give them a bunch of airplanes, and then they could go to sleep.
Oh, okay, they can fly around the world.
On
all the energy we're producing.
Right.
Let them all eat cake.
In the Arab Spring was very clearly a result of a flood in Russia. It's not clear on the surface, but after you
I got you.
The Russians passed us up years back as producers, and years back being about 6 years back.
Of wheat.
Right. The largest producers of wheat. And the reason for that is because we passed some laws here that gave extra subsidies for corn so that we could do ethanol production. So we stopped doing so much wheat. We started doing a lot more corn. The Russians said, hey, price of wheat is going up. We're going to plant more wheat. So they passed us up. They said, we're pumping out all kinds of wheat all over the place. They became the number one exporter of wheat in the world. There was a massive flood in the middle of their harvest season, which caused them to seal their borders for exports. They would not export any wheat. They were going to keep it all in Russia for the Russians to eat. And that caused bread riots in northern Africa.
Right.
because the dictators of Northern Africa had this cozy little deal with their populace. We'll give you basically free food, free bread.
And circuses,
and you will do what we tell you.
Right.
Well, when the bread stopped being free because the government couldn't support it anymore, this was twofold. The price of production of oil, as well as the capacity for producing oil, has been dropping in those nations. So they're getting less money from oil than they did before, even with the prices going up. At the same time that the wheat prices went up, meant that they couldn't subsidize it at the same level, and they had bread riots. And the bread riots turned into...
You know, in Tunisia, you know how it started.
The person lit himself on fire because a tax man came and seized his bread stall.
And he's actually a little wagon that he was selling bread on.
A little stall wagon thing.
And the reason they seized it is because the government, there was a shortage of bread, and the government forbade the selling of bread other than by the government.
Correct.
So he was able to raise his prices and people could actually get bread.
Bread is the reason why Egypt as a government fell.
Right.
All these protests, all of that stuff was based on bread. And we'd like to think it's some democratic movement. We can do all kinds of great thoughts about how the government's changed. And now the thought is, well, no, it was really Islamic extremists underneath it all. And the reality is it was wheat.
Right.
And what we're talking about now with energy and with labor costs, and we as a nation are driving the world economy. So there will be consequences to the things that we do that are good for us.
Mm-hmm. And the lowering, one of the things is that you can expect to see the price per barrel of oil start downward.
And it will continue downward.
And the price of, now the price of gas, meaning the stuff you burn in your stove, not in your car, may not stay as low as it is today, because once we start exporting it, by the way, there were some complaints, vigorous complaints against the releasing of more liquid natural gas exports.
Well, we have such a glut of it here. We have a massive
glut. Because
the
price actually might rise just a little bit.
Yeah, it's not going to rise anywhere.
Well, yeah. And the big problem right now with gas, by the way, in the United States, we could basically supply the world with gas. We have two problems. One, we don't have enough pipelines. We could supply the world with oil.
We don't have enough refineries.
Well, we don't have enough, and we don't have enough pipelines either. Because, for instance, in West Texas, where there is a big oil boom going on,
right?
There's one railroad that serves the area, which incidentally belongs to the state of Texas.
Yeah.
And it was actually purchased because we thought NAFTA would produce a big rail line, and it didn't work out, and we just failed to sell it.
Right.
Which is government by accident did something right.
Yeah.
But the oil tankers, and when I went out to West Texas towards the desert, they were there. I saw
But it's a very inefficient, is as efficient as railways are. It's compared to a pipeline, it's massively inefficient.
But it's only a single line railway. It is operating at capacity, so they're actually running trucks empty to go get the oil and driving them back down to the Houston area to bring the oil to the refineries. We're running the roadblocks we're running into in the United States today to get to energy independence have little or nothing to do with getting the oil out of the ground.
Right.
They have to do with transporting and refining the oil. And
That's infrastructure issues.
We are actually making, amazingly enough, some significant progress in that area. We were talking about that last hour. But the combination of two things. One, the United States is the leader in technology.
In just about every field of technology.
And we're rapidly becoming the leader in energy production in the world. Folks,
All kinds of other areas of research, the leaders of the world are right here in our country.
The driving forces in the world that can be identified at this point economically are twofold. One is the United States of America, and we are so big it is staggering. Secondly is what we generally refer to as emerging markets.
Right.
Those two areas, the emerging markets are just crammed full of people who want to come up to the middle class status. And democracy has established itself as the primary means of government. The Cold War is over. And those markets where smaller countries around the world that are striving to become, to live at the level we do here in the United States, and who are capable of producing a great deal of stuff that we don't want to produce because their labor's cheaper,
yeah,
have a phenomenal potential going forward. They always have had a phenomenal potential, but this is, it is magnified by our potential as we grow. Now, are we going to have some strains going into this? Oh, absolutely. But the good news is, you know, we said earlier that the majority of jobs that exist today won't exist in 2040. The good news is this is going to happen all over the world. The United States will be the nation that benefits the most from it. How we are going to deal with it, I don't know. But we are so chaotic, and we have dealt with this before. We have dealt with the fact that the arrival of the tractor and the pickup truck, we've yeah. dealt with the arrival of the railroad. The steam engine, massive technological innovation is something that we sort of expect in the United States. Yeah.
There was a time when we were shocked by it, but now it's shocking when it doesn't happen.
They don't expect it in Europe. For whatever it's worth, the demographics in the actual population, I saw this, the population of China shrunk last year.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
Japan is getting older at a very rapid rate, and its population has stopped growing. Europe's population has stopped growing.
Western Europe specifically is shrinking. Eastern Europe is growing.
Well, Russia is shrinking pretty fast.
Russia is shrinking incredibly fast. Hungary, the Czech Republic,
Poland,
Bulgaria, these areas are growing, and their population is getting younger, and they're getting more educated. There's a new frontier there.
The world is changing, and it's changing pretty fast. And it seems to be accelerating. Somebody asked first hour, the question is, what the stock market is saying about the United States correct as it goes up? Well, the stock market's got a long ways to go to get back to normal. It's in recovery mode right now. But the long-term view of American stocks, of American corporations, and of the United States of America is pretty obvious if you look at world economics. The yen has fallen pretty substantially against the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be the bastion. The world is running on dollars. By the way, do you know, I'm trying to think of where it was that I just got through. See, Greece? You're going to think this is amazing. Greece is basically sort of recovered.
Uh-huh.
But I'm trying to think of where it is that there was a massive economic collapse besides
Cyprus.
Greece. But
Italy, Spain.
Basically, they're starting to use dollars there in all of these places.
Yeah, Cyprus, I know, has considered using dollars because the euro is being seized by banks.
But the point is that if you want to give thanks for something, give thanks for being born in or living in the United States of America in the 21st century, because back in 2002, there was an article, Tale of Two Bellies. It was the cover article in The Economist, and it said the 21st century will be dominated by the United States of America. And not just we will lead, we will dominate the world during the century. And man, is that ever proving to be the truth.
Now, consumer confidence. The consumer sentiment index?
It smelled pretty good last time I smelled it.
Well, it came in, the consumer sentiment. Scent of mint?
Right.
Right. Came in
strong
yesterday at 83.7,
mm-hmm.
which we should just stop with that. Okay, consumer sentiment is 83.7.
I like
go
that.
On
That's
with
good.
Our people. Would
now,
go,
then we can
the
we
world?
Can go right on to the CBOC's deficit narrowing to $642 billion.
Oh, where are they talking about again? Those bald people are weird.
Yeah.
Okay, consumer sentiment index. When would I say it's at 83.7? This is the way people feel about their lives, not about other people's life. And when we get those surveys in, they're still showing that they're doing fine, but other people are doing horribly. Well, consumer sentiment is for yourself in your own life, what do you expect to see? Is it good or is it bad? It's at 83.7. That's the highest it has been since July of 2007, and something kind of minor happened right after that.
Really?
If you recall.
What?
The Great Recession happened right after that.
I can't remember back that far. Slept since then.
And that's not a sign that we're about to hit another Great Recession, by the way. It just is a sign that we have recovered from that Great Recession in our own minds.
The stink is now behind us.
We expect things to get better.
Which is an interesting concept, except at Dell.
Right. Well, to give a number, in April, so the month before this, the sentiment level was 76.4. It's now 83.7. That's a significant percentage. We're talking about a 10% jump or so, a little bit less than 10% jump in the way we think things are going to be in the future. That's pretty amazing. What were you saying about Dell?
Dell's profits were announced last week.
Uh-huh.
Down 79% from last year at this time.
That's not a surprise. They've been talking about that quite a lot. They've been saying this, you know, the mobile industry is kicking in and the PC industry is kicking out.
You got to see the irony in this. After Dell telling Apple that they needed to shut down and sell their shares and return the money to the public,
right,
to their shareholders, and now Michael Dell himself is proposing selling the company and returning the money to the shareholders.
Well, buying the company.
Well, he's buying the company, but he's actually selling it to a consortium of investors. He's one of the investors, yes. But he is interested in selling. There's a great deal of irony here, by the way. He would get a huge chunk of the money that's being paid for the company.
Yeah.
But that is an example of the emerging technology that we're just talking about.
Yeah. When we're talking about computing,
and it could have an impact on local economy too,
right? If just thinking about Dell's main industry for a long time were desktop PCs, where you had this box that you had. It's funny that we call it desktop when most of the time the boxes were underneath the desk at some point, and a big monitor sitting on top of the desk, and now the monitors are tiny. And
I got a big
most
monitor.
People don't, well, pick it up, see how much it weighs.
it weighs about a ton. But
compared to what it used to weigh?
It weighs about the same as it used to weigh. It's just about four times as big.
Okay. So
I have a Thunderbolt for
that. Yeah. The idea that I'm saying here, though, is that it's moved more and more mobile. When people buy a PC in our office, for instance, we don't buy the box. We buy laptops. We buy high-end laptops, and they're portable, and there's going to be more and more of that. At this point, a laptop is the size of the keyboard and the screen.
And we are actually a little behind because of what we do. We need to be where we are, but more and more work, real work that you would expect to be done on a computer, is actually being done on an iPad. Matter of fact, tablets are different kinds. The iPad is the most popular so far, but the whole issue is that, I only mentioned Dell because in the midst of this rising economy,
there are some areas that are obviously not rising so well. They're still profitable though. That's the thing. Their profit was still there. It was just less than it was.
Well, they actually lost money on everything except one area. And that one area was the services they provide to enterprise corporations.
And that, I think, there is going to continue to some extent, because I'm not expecting to see a lot of iPads taking over the computing processing power. However,
it's coming.
This is the thing that is a big, huge issue. Are you familiar with Google Fiber?
No.
Okay. Google Fiber is fiber optic internet communication. It's already existing in Kansas City, and it's coming next year to Austin. It is, most people aren't familiar with internet speed. It is possible that you will be able to. It is gigabit upload and gigabit download.
For your Google Glass.
For anything. And they offer it in the lower capacities for free for anybody in the city. That will be the future. And at that type of internet connection. I have little monitors on my computer so I can look and see how fast my hard drive is working. My hard drive cannot write information to itself at that speed, which means that we could outsource our computer processors to the internet. The cloud computers would not just store data, but also process data for us.
And now we
so
have to
we just
now,
have a screen with an internet connection.
We just ban backhoes at that point.
Yes, no more backhoes. Do not cut the fiber. So that concept that I'm saying there is also, you know, we were talking about going more and more mobile. We have little processors in our computer that make it loud and hot. If we put those processors all over the country in temperature-controlled rooms and people just use them, you know how
it's
inefficient
happening.
It is to have a computer processor in your computer that's not working most of the time?
Think about the fact that up until very recently, our email was processed in our computers.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in our office, our email never...
Never even... Yeah,
the processing for the email, which was the slowest thing on my computer.
It takes place off of the computer.
Yeah, it takes place, I don't even know where.
It takes place on servers that we have in different places all over the country.
Floating
so that if they shut down, we have automatic access to it in another location.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And because of the fact that probably didn't realize this, but this station, which is KTEM,
it's a for-profit organization.
It is, and it's owned by something called Town Square. And is that what it?
Town Square Media?
Yeah, Town Square Media. And they have this irrational urge.
They want to make money
to charge people to run advertisements on our show. So we are going to allow some of those advertisements to run so that the electric bill can get paid, and eventually they may actually buy some equipment in here.
That would be nice.
Yeah, it would be really nice. But you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we will be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And I don't know the difference between 11 and a 12 on the button there, so obviously punched the wrong.
This is a quick disclaimer. We do not endorse the people that, nor do we review the people that play their commercials on our program. And in many cases, not only do we not endorse them, we don't agree with them.
Right. So
that's for your benefit.
Yep.
That's the disclosure.
Telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. We've got about 20 minutes left.
I can see going to Lowe's and getting a gas grill if I wanted a gas grill, though.
You could.
I could.
Yeah.
I don't endorse their gas grills.
It's a pretty good song about gas grills,
too.
It's
pretty neat.
It's a well-written song about a gas grill, and it's being less expensive.
Yeah, I don't ever sing when I use my gas grill. So what has happened? For those of you, we mentioned this earlier, that the stock market actually continues to do very, very well. Technically, it's hitting records. For the week, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 1.56%, which doesn't sound too impressive. It's 52-week return, though, 24%. That's obviously a good thing if you're a stock investor. The S&P 500 up 28, almost 29% for 52 weeks. It was up about 2% last week. Year-to-date, it's up almost 17. And obviously, that is the story across the board, with exceptions. And the exceptions are creating a little bit of interesting results, at least in our office. I don't think we have anybody other than maybe somebody that's in a TSP or some kind of pension plan that's invested in the S&P 500 or anything that looks like it. We diversify, and we're running into a problem here. And it's the reverse of the problem that we ran into in 2009. And in 2009, people said we want out of the market or buy into bonds. Bonds are doing really, really well. And we've really cut our holdings in bonds recently down to some very, very low interest, absolutely secure positions that are there to avoid loss from income in the event of a collapse. That's all they're there for right now. We don't expect to make any money there. But at this point, people we've actually had some people upset, and they've looked at their portfolio and say, goodness gracious. As an example, one of them said, I've only gotten 8% so far this year. We're 0.37% through the year, for those who track such things, which if you multiply that out, that's like a huge return for the year. And they're a little bit upset about that. But here's where the backside to the risk to a long-term investor will arrive. When the stock market, the S&P 500, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, has huge gains, your portfolio should not be gaining as much as the market. I'm going to say that again. If you have a serious long-term investment portfolio and the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average do what they have done this year, which is run up big double digits in a relatively short period of time, if you are enjoying the same level of gains in your entire portfolio, you are headed for a fall. I know that sounds absolutely counterintuitive. They're going up very, very fast right now because they went down very, very fast. And the only way to match, right now, for example, the highest returns in the world year to date are in U.S. equities. And if you are 100% in U.S. equities, by the way, the best asset class to be in is one we use regularly, is mid-cap value, which is up like 39% for the year. The worst equity asset class pretty much to be in right now is emerging markets, which we also have a big investment in. Why? Well, because that's exactly what we want. In any good portfolio, you will have money in something that's down and money in something that's up. The intuitive reaction is to sell that which is down and buy that which is up. And the language is always the same. Emerging markets are going down. Get out of them. The U.S. stock market is going up. Get into it. Which is the equation. In the big equation, it's a very simple result. Buy low, sell high. I've actually had people said, so you think buy low, sell high is a good idea? And they said, yes. I've actually had people say that.
Well, that buy low, sell high is a good idea.
They think that's a good idea, and then they stop and think. Sometimes they'll stop and think about it and say, wait a minute, was there something wrong with what I – wasn't there something wrong
with what I – No, buy low, sell high is a good idea.
Okay,
you're saying it backwards.
The buy high, sell low.
There you go. Yeah.
Actually, it's sell low, buy high.
Yes.
That's what they want to do.
That's so consistent.
And it's just something in general to be aware of. If you know somebody who says, my entire portfolio has gone up 15% this year or 18% this year. Man, what they not going to tell you about is when the bottom falls out and they're with it. And it will occur. And over the long term, there are things that work. And they've worked consistently over the long term. And the secret to long-term investment success is to stick with it and not chase returns in the market. We had a question earlier from a caller about is the money going into all these 401ks affecting the market? Well, yes. But, and I want to emphasize something here, we actually are underinvesting as a nation. We need more people investing in the market, because every study that I read, and I've read a lot of them, suggests that the majority of Americans are not investing enough to support themselves in retirement. Why are they not investing enough? Because somehow they think somebody else will take care of it. That is going to be a critical issue down the road. And it is so important. And if we have something that's wrong with our education system, if I could fix one thing in the education system by waving a magic wand, what I would fix is, I would say, mandate teaching portfolio theory, because that's where the retirement of the future is going to be.
Agreed.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Within stocks, is there a certain sector that you think may correct this year? Or is
all of them.
We are probably going to see a drop some point this year in the market.
There's a correction almost every year.
If we look back for the last 50 weeks, we've seen a pretty steady rise. human nature is the reason why I'm saying there should be a drop. It isn't because the market is overpriced. It isn't. It is because human nature doesn't like to see things go up consistently for a year without any drops in it. They get scared and people go, oh, let's get out of this. But the earnings are at a point where if you just sit through that, you should be fine as long as you're well diversified and it's based on a good plan. Now, coming in it from a different direction, sometime in the near future when interest rates shift, bonds are going to have some issues.
And bonds, once bonds start down, and a lot of people are joining with us now and saying, get rid of market risk in bonds. But I think I know when the correct, I don't know this, and so we're not, market timing doesn't work, but I can tell you that we are going to have a budget ceiling fight.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime, probably late this year, because the government is bringing in more money. The deficit is lower.
Sometime between June and October.
Yeah, and maybe even October, November. Sometime this fall, if the budget, the last time we had a major market decline was over, and I mean a really serious correction that smelled a little bit like it was going to turn into a bear market,
yeah,
was when the Congress took us to within one day of default. And if you want to know when it's coming, and by the way, I do not suggest trying to time the market from this in any form or fashion. Just kind of buckle your seatbelt and get ready for the fact that there's going to be a political stand made at the point when the government's about to run out of money.
That will put a lot of volatility in the market. It's going to happen.
Right. If the Republicans carry it in the House, carry it to the point of threatening to cut off federal payments to everybody, and it gets close enough, we could see a pretty serious correction. But it's artificial. They will not cut it off. They will not. The money will be there. It will come back. They've done this again and again and again. I don't know. Hopefully the market is smart enough to realize that at the edge of the cliff they pull back each time. But there's always the possibility they won't pull back. And very frankly, an awful lot of our economy, an awful lot of people in our economy are dependent upon getting a check from the United States government at least once a month, sometimes twice a month, deposited in their bank account. And if they don't, it would have a very significant short-term effect on the economy.
Impacts all sectors?
Oh, yeah. So you can't hide from it. That's called a systemic risk. You cannot avoid systemic risk. You can manage it.
Well, you can.
We can hedge systemic risk, but you can't avoid it.
Sure.
How? Leave the country? Leave the world.
Or dig a very deep hole and put a bunker in it. Even then, you're only avoided if it doesn't happen right on you.
You've got to breathe, which means that you've got to have air going into it, which takes a fan.
Very nice ventilation system and your own power supply. But other than that, you can't avoid systemic risk.
We can cushion against systemic risk. And this is what, if you're drawing income from a portfolio, the way we do that, and it infuriates certain people that I do it this way, we have, let's just say a person's in retirement and they have 60% of, and this is just a general, they have 60% of their money in appreciation assets we expect to grow over a long period of time. They might have 40% of their money in what we call preservation assets. Those preservation assets are not there to make money. They're there to draw on if something bad happens in the system.
Because preserves taste good on toast.
You got it. And so this is how a good portfolio is put together. But as far as a correction is concerned, we have one virtually every year. I don't know of a year where we haven't had one. September through November of last year, we had a correction.
Yeah.
And we will have one again this year simply because humans are humans. And
coming back to the rationale underneath it, we believe in long-term investing and the underlying, and we're talking about a correction right now at a time when we're seeing massive good returns in the market. This is some for those of you out there that think that we're forever optimists. I expect that long term the market is going to continue to do very well, but human nature says that we have to have a correction at some point in the next 6 to 8 months.
And it's not just human nature, by the way. If you go down to the ocean when the tide is coming in, you will notice that the waves go in and out even as the tide is coming in.
So ocean nature suggests it as well, as well as ants and leaf and
deer populations. Right. And so we are in a rising tide, if you will, in the economy and in the markets.
And rising tides raise all ships, and some ships have holes in them.
Not all. The ones that are sitting on the bottom with holes in them, those don't go up.
But some of those ships are hiding holes. If we don't have the tide go out, we don't know which one. Well, this is even better. We don't know who's not wearing swimming suits until the tide goes out.
That's Philip Gray's.
Yeah, and that is a true statement. We need them in our society. Without the tide going out, Madoff would still be hanging around.
And we are in a rising tide position. Somebody asked me yesterday with a great deal of seriousness, do I expect to have a major market crash similar to the ones we had in 2000 through 2002 and 2007 through 2009 in the near future? Because, you know, it was 2000, it started in 2007, it's now 2013. So the first one, the end of 2007 started, was about 7 years after the last one started.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting there.
We're getting close to where that is. I don't expect it to be anywhere near as severe.
But this is the point. If you look back in history, and there's no certainty in looking in history about telling the future, but we're pretty close there. Major market downturns come in pairs.
Yeah.
1929, we're all familiar with the crash, but how about the crash of 1937?
Right. How about 1973 and then 1978, we've got these pairs.
And then the 82 one was the 80-82 market decline was actually part of that same set. So what you have is a double downturn is normal. We're through the double downturn. The market has a very low price earnings ratio compared with history.
Generally, when we have a double downturn, we have some minor corrections, but other than that, we have massive booming for a decade or so.
Think
of the 80s, think of the 90s, think of the 40s and 50s.
The market right now, and you're going to think this is crazy, but I'm going to say it, the market, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, could rise 50% in the very near future without exceeding its traditional price-earnings ratio.
Yeah. 50%. It would not be overpriced at that point.
So we're talking about, as a matter of fact, Barron's is predicting an 18,500 Dow by the end of next year.
And that's not inconceivable.
And they predicted the 15,000.
This year.
Early this year. I mean, they predicted that a couple of years ago. So I would think that a Dow of 18,500 is a very reasonable thing to look at in the near future.
That's not even a major return between now and a few years from now.
You can write this down. Within a few years, we will see a 20,000 Dow. And it's going to happen. I can't say that with absolute certainty, but I can say the probabilities are way up in the upper 90s. There's going to be some bumps along the way. Gradually, more and more people will pile on, and then you will hear us at some point, presuming we're still here and the radio station is still here, you'll hear us talk about the fact that the market is starting to be overpriced.
Yeah. At this point, it is not. It is nowhere near overpriced, just like at this point, we don't see any signs of inflation. In a few years, we might be saying the opposite, but right now, we are not.
Actually, we got signs of deflation going on out there still, so that's a little bit... Thank God the Fed has not cut off the money spigot because we do have some distinct signs. The producer price index actually dropped last month.
That is a sign of deflation. So when people hear us talking about we see no signs of inflation, we're talking about right now. We might be saying something completely different in a few years.
So that's where we are.
Hopefully we'll be saying something completely different in a few years. Otherwise, it'll be a lot of very boring episodes where we just say the same thing all episode.
That's what somebody said we did the last 2 weeks.
No, those were reruns. Maybe we should just do reruns for the next couple of years.
Okay, does that make sense to you, caller?
Yes, thanks.
Okay.
No, thanks for the call.
And you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And we've only got about 3.5 minutes this episode, this whole week.
Tick. Tick.
Tick.
Tick.
I'm not going to say it.
Tick.
I'm not.
We have ways of making you talk.
Oh, tick tock. Ah. He made me say it.
Yes. Anyway, the personal wealth coach. Should we talk about the personal wealth coach?
Sure.
Okay. Personal wealth coach is an investment advisory firm. And I want to point out something here that is another one of my personal soapboxes. We're not a financial advisor. We're investment advisors. Financial advisors are people who sell securities and sell insurance and do all that stuff. They sell stuff.
We sell advice. Fiduciary advice.
We are a fee-only investment advisory firm. We charge very fully disclosed fees to find the best investments for our clients. We are fiduciaries, which means we work solely for our clients. Obviously, we charge fees, but we don't get anything on the side. As a matter of fact, I'm getting all kinds of offers right now of free meals that we're turning down. We are going to be gone the beginning of next month to a conference put on by our custodian, and we're hopefully going to learn a couple of things while we're there. Who knows? But we do manage investment portfolios for people who need their investment portfolios managed, which is our opinion. We do that professionally.
Mm-hmm. And if you would like to contact us to inquire about our services or just to tell us how strange we sound on the radio, you can reach us. We have voicemail waiting on the weekends locally at
947-1111. See, I had to get that 947-1111 because that way I can remember the telephone number.
Right.
And he lets me say that because I can remember. So.
You can also reach us toll-free, voicemail still, at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to thepersonalwealthcoach.com, which is our webpage. We've got podcasts available for if you haven't reached quite the point of insanity from listening to us live. You can definitely reach it by listening to the past several years of us.
Dead.
Well, I guess recordings would be dead.
Yeah.
Right.
Those of us, yeah. If you're not totally saturated.
Yeah, we actually enjoy what we do quite a lot, which is, I think, a little bit abnormal in that we like digging into what's going on in on a large scale, and then bringing it down to specific individual portfolio scale of your investments, our clients' investments, and what to do with them going forward. And it probably gives us a little too much fun.
I enjoy what I'm doing entirely. So I was actually able to set it around and experiment with one of your programs yesterday.
Oh, good.
Anyway. Yeah. So you have been listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and until next week, that's who we are, and that's hopefully who we will be. This is The Personal Wealth
News
Coach.
Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.